Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio.
I want to hold them like they do in Texas, please.
With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the 2008 World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up and deal.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
And welcome to downtown St. Louis. I am Paul Harris, sitting along Team Poker Stars Pro Dennis Phillips as we wind down our final show of 2009.
Amazing, isn't it? It's the end of December in 2009.
Yeah, and quite a year for you, which we're going to get to in a second. let me just billboard a couple of other things we have on the show. The poker coach is back, Joe McGowan, joining us by phone from his home in Southern California. Hi, Joe. How are you today? Okay. Well, we will connect with Joe.
Somebody wake Joe up.
I'm here, guys.
There you are. Hi, Joe.
I made it.
What do you got for us on the show today?
A fun topic, bluffing, setting up your bluffs.
Setting up your bluffs. Okay. We'll have a little lesson from the poker coach later on in the hour. Also joining us later on, Vanessa Russo, who has had one heck of a 2009.
Oh, absolutely. Lady Maverick has gone nuts on the poker table and outside of it.
Yeah, made a lot of money and a lot of endorsement money outside of the poker game. And she's on this new reality show on E! Called Bank of Hollywood,
yep,
which I watched a little bit of again last night, knowing she would be on today. So she'll be on there. But before we get to anything else, congratulations to you, Dennis, on a pretty successful 2009. Your own self.
I've been a pretty good year, I got to admit, both on and off the table. Made a lot of new friends, got really incorporated well into the poker world. The future is looking pretty darn good right now.
Yeah. Also, last year, hope you don't mind me saying this, people looked at you as the guy who had made it to the November 9, the unlikely November 9er.
Oh, absolutely.
Who had gotten there and gone into the final table as the chip leader and ended up in third place, finishing it behind Eastgate and Demidoff and taking home $4.5 million, money that changed your life and an experience that changed your life. But there were some people who wrote you off as a flash in the pan.
Yep.
This year, I think you proved them wrong. I really think you changed a lot of opinions.
Well, I hope some of the people at the table keep playing the way they played against me this year. Did I really say that out loud?
Joe, this was a pretty impressive year for him, wasn't it?
Yeah, very much so. I think you nailed it, Paul. I agree with you totally.
So, congratulations on that.
Well, yeah, but a person's only as good as his friends, and I got two real good ones here, guys.
Well,
between Paul and Joe, I couldn't ask for much better.
Wow. Do I owe you money or something? So we're moving into 2010, and I guess right here at the top of the show we should announce a change for the final table.
Yep.
Today is our last day doing the show here at Lumiere Place in downtown St. Louis.
Yes.
Nothing against this casino.
Oh, my gosh, no. I love this casino. I'll continue to play down here. I'm going to be playing later tonight. Got some great friends here. Everybody from Tony on down, they've just treated us fabulously.
Yeah, special thanks to Tony Russo, who started as the poker room manager a year ago when we were here. That's not when he started, but when we started the show, he was the poker room manager. Now he's worked his way up to assistant casino manager. I know the company loves him, and we really appreciate his friendship and his stewardship in getting this show off the ground from one of their tables right here. They only got 13 tables in the room, and they let us take one every week to do this show. So we really appreciate that.
Although sometimes they're lined up outside of it waiting for us to get off so they can use the table.
That's right.
But,
absolutely.
Yeah, definitely kudos to Tony. Great guy. And I think Lumiere is now realizing just how good he is, and hopefully the future is bright with him.
Absolutely. So we're not leaving because we don't like the people here. It was a simple business decision. Next week we will debut the final table from Harrah's St. Louis. Another big poker room here in town. It is the place where Dennis got launched 2 years ago by winning a satellite that got you going into the World Series of Poker after your local success. That's really your launching pad for national success and international success, right?
It was a pretty good springboard, I'll have to admit.
Yeah. So the show will continue, and you'll still be able to listen to it here on 590 The Fan KFNS or downloading the podcast from Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. Mm-hmm. It'll just be from a different place next week. And ironically, when we move, Dennis won't even be there.
This is true. I'm going to go partake of the sun, I guess you'd say, down in the Bahamas.
No, you're not.
I know I won't.
You're going to the Bahamas, but you won't be in the sun, and you won't touch the water again.
I'll be able to see it. I can look right out the window and see it. Guarantee it. From the table, I'll be able to look out the window and see it. So I'll be down there at the PokerStars Caribbean Adventure. I'll be down there for about 2 weeks. Huge event going on down there. They expect anywhere from 1,500 to 2,000 in the main event. This might be the second biggest behind the WSOP in the world. Huge number of online qualifiers, huge number of people just going down there to play. 50 different events going on down there. I mean, there are tournaments every day and every hour of every day down there.
Tremendous.
So, yeah, I'm just looking forward to it. This should be good.
Okay, how jealous am I right now?
Me too. Me too. You know, I don't remember a time when I got to do my part of the show from the Bahamas. Not once in the entire year we've been on the air here. And neither has Joe.
Yeah, some sacrifices must be made, so I guess I'll have to do it
so
down there.
You'll be down there with the rest of the members of Team PokerStars Pro. And
yes.
I just read this morning that PokerStars has lined up a couple dozen new players for something they call Team PokerStars Online. What is that?
Well, a lot of the people are really having a lot of success online, are playing extremely good poker. We're trying to bring them to the forefront. We're trying to reward them for what they're doing there on it.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a new category so that if you prefer to play online versus the real tournament, you should be recognized. You should have the acclimates for it. That's what they're doing.
Okay. Now, is this going to be just people who play at a certain level, or will there be some low-stakes players in there moving people all around so that all the different online pros will be seen even more when people go to PokerStars to play?
Again, it's going to be a wide variety and a wide scope of it. We'll concentrate on the people that will get the most recognizable, which, unfortunately, or fortunately, whichever way, is usually the higher stakes. But
mm-hmm.
we're not going to ignore the people in the lower ones. We want the best players. We want the ones that are going to be able to help other players to grow. So, you know, wherever they happen to fall, that's the ones we'll be looking at.
All right. So in addition to the several dozen members of Team PokerStars Pro, you and Vanessa among them, there will be, as of right now, I think it's 23
yep.
online pros who have been added to that list. And while we're talking about PokerStars, you said to me last week that they were going to try to break some record in the Guinness Book of World Records. And you told me it was going to go on this weekend.
They didn't break. They shattered. For an online tournament, the previous record held by PokerStars was 65,000.
Mm-hmm.
This last Sunday, they decided, let's see if we can break it. They didn't break it. They crushed it. 149,000 people in the same tournament. I can't even fathom that. That's you know, unbelievable.
What size was it, Dennis? How big of a tournament was it?
No, it was just a small stakes tournament. Everybody can get in it. You know, there were free rolls to get into it, the whole bit.
Joe, 30,000 people cashed.
Wow.
30,000 out of 149,000.
And by the way,
was
I did not.
Was it a $10 tournament? I mean, I'm just curious.
No, it was just a $1 tournament actually on it.
A $1 tournament.
But. Yeah, yeah.
But you did not cash?
I did not cash. Unfortunately, I should have known better that my ace-king was no good against a jack-six offsuit.
You got it all in with ace-king again?
I did.
I thought that we banned you from playing that hand. Joe, haven't you talked to the boy?
It's hard. You know, it's hard. The smaller stake ones are so difficult to play. I mean, for
jack-six.
Tons of reasons.
Unbelievable.
How long does it take to play down from 149,000 to one?
Oh, this was a turbo one. It really didn't take that long. I think the whole thing only lasted like 6 or 7 hours.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, they were nuts.
Wow.
The computer couldn't keep up with how fast the people were going out.
Wow.
But to go out 149,000 in 6 hours, what was it, one hand and the blinds go up?
Not quite that much, but it did progress rather rapidly.
While we're talking about online play, I want to talk to you about a controversy that brewed, not on PokerStars, but on another site, which involved this guy, Isildur One, who
yep.
we have talked about in the past. He's this kid from, people think he might be from Sweden, a young player who got on there and started playing against Tom Der Dwan and Phil Ivey and Ilari Sahamis, Zygmunt, and some of these other players, including Brian Townsend, and his swings were in the millions of dollars.
Oh, absolutely.
In sessions, and most famously, just a couple of weeks ago, he lost $4.2 million in one session to a guy named Brian Hastings.
Mm-hmm.
After that loss, Brian Townsend, who was affiliated with that website, was endorsed by that website, talked publicly in an interview, and so did Brian Hastings, about the fact that Townsend and another guy who had played Isildur named Cole, that they had shared some of their hand histories with Brian Hastings. Hand histories from when they had played Isildur 1 heads up. This created an online controversy and ended up with Townsend and I think maybe the other guy getting suspended from that site because it's against the rules, the terms and conditions of that site, where people are not allowed to share hand histories with each other. Here's my question to you. I play online a little bit. You guys play online a lot. What's wrong with sharing hand histories?
Well, I think and I'm not for sure I disagree with what you're saying, but I think one of the arguments for it is they want no player to have any kind of an advantage over the other one. For whatever reason, they want everybody to stand on their own merit. And if you in some way or other are getting, you know, not just talking to a player, but getting actual recorded hands and how they're played and documented so you can feed them into a computer so you can see betting patterns and everything like that, is that an unfair advantage onto it? It's not physically just talking to a person, how does he play?
Right.
It's documentation of actual hands played and how they were played. And again, on a computer spreadsheet so that you can actually see how he plays and what his betting patterns are.
Joe, how is that different from me coming out to Southern California where you live and you take me to your local casino into the big game there, and before we sit down, you say, Paul, let me tell you about these players because I played against them for years. This guy plays like this. This guy likes to bluff. This guy will tend, if a scare card comes out, he's going to put money out there to try to get you off a hand. And you give me the knowledge that you've accumulated in playing live hands against all of these players. What's the difference between that and what these guys were doing?
Well, you know, it's a tough one. You know, first off, I'm not sure I'd want you coming into my game and beating my game. I don't know if I'd give you that stuff as good as we're friends. But really, I don't think I have a great answer for this one, Paul, and I'm kind of one of those people. I know a little bit about this story. I've followed it. It has been big news in the poker community, and it was pretty cool to watch, and I did even sign on and watch some of the guys play some of the heads-up battles and watch millions of dollars exchange. But, you know, which one is more valuable? You and I talking about a game and knowing people's tendencies? You know, I'd say that's probably possibly more valuable, but if there's tens of thousands of hands and these guys are putting into some computer program, maybe that is more valuable and should be illegal. But then a lot of the people that I've talked to, and I haven't talked to perhaps a lot, I probably used the wrong word there, you know, is this something you can even police? Should they just make it legal? I mean, how are you really going to find out if people are doing this and how bad is it? So it's a tough one. It'll be interesting to see. Maybe you know, some of our listeners have some more insight and can email in for us, and we can talk more about it next week. You know, how big of an advantage is this? Well, it's interesting to try to find out.
I agree with you. There is limited knowledge to be gained when you're playing online. Joe is such an, you're one of the best I've ever seen, period, at looking at a player and being able to read him and seeing his tendencies and the whole bit like that. You don't have that advantage online. Online, you look at betting patterns, you look at hand history, you look
right
at this other, because it's so limited what you can,
right,
what information you can draw from it. And if you have that all in front of you on a spreadsheet, out there, documented and such, it's almost the type of thing you could feed into a computer and let a computer play for you, maybe. I don't know.
But you see, I could see it as being collusion, maybe that's not the right word, cheating, maybe that's not the right word. I could see it being unethical if, for instance, you, Dennis, had played several hours against somebody else, and then I was going to sit down and play heads up against that person, but you were standing right next to me watching me play, and as I'm playing, you would say, okay, I've seen this situation before. He's definitely bluffing here based on whatever you knew about the guy from the hands that you had played against him. I could see how that might be something, because you're supposed to be only playing against one person. It's supposed to be, when you're online, it's you and that other person. Just like in a live game, no one else at the table can talk. Nobody can help you while you're in the hand. I could see that. But talking ahead of time about somebody's tendencies, to me, that goes on at every level of poker.
But it comes down to this. Was it actually a level playing field? According to the rules of this other site, he could not share that information with him.
Yeah.
does that mean then that Isidore won, did not have that information available against his opponent?
Well, he may not have known somebody who had played against Hastings as much.
Yeah.
But that's not his fault. Just like if I go to Joe's game, none of those guys know my game, but Joe can tell me all about them.
Well, we're walking a fine line here, but if it is against the policies of that site and he broke those policies, that is an unfair advantage at that level. In actuality, I'm trying to argue the other side, but it's a little hard because I'm agreeing with you in most cases, okay? But there is a fine line here, and I think they did cross it. If you and I want to compare notes about the player that we both played against, we do it all the time. People do it all over the place.
Yep.
But to actually take the documented hands, and we're not talking, when he played Durr on there, and he took him for $5.5 million, they played 45,000 hands.
Wow.
Now, when you have 45,000 hands in there on a spreadsheet,
yep,
I think you might be able to discover a few tendencies, okay?
Well, somebody might be able to. I know I couldn't.
Okay. But it's just this was huge stakes, a huge amount of potential money on it. At one time, he was up over $5 million. He ended up losing $2 or $3 million. I'm not sure exactly how much. But they had the 12 biggest pots in history,
yep,
were played in these last 2 months, and he was in every single one of them against a variety of different people.
Now, there are some people saying in some online forums that because Hastings got help from these other two players, that other site should give Isildur 1 some of his money back. Do you buy that at all?
Wow. I'm not for sure how they could have monitored or policed that. It's in their policies. These guys broke it. Wow.
Well, you know, I think it's like Joe says, completely unenforceable.
All they could do is basically suspend him from playing on the site, which they've done.
Which is exactly what they've done.
They could request.
Which makes sense to me, too, guys. I mean, I think that, you know, the online sites, they really want to protect what they have. And having
absolutely
that integrity. And if you play on our site, it's going to be legit. You're going to get a square, you know, straight game. So,
yes,
you know, I think they may be trying to lean more in that direction as opposed to kind of a live game.
Here's what Isildur...
I have a couple friends that are involved with other sites that are, you know, pros at other sites. And even just sitting around the house and talking about a hand, a couple of them are kind of sensitive where they say that's collusion. You're not even allowed to talk about it, you know, because that's like two players against one when I'm sitting there watching a friend play. You know, they're a little bit sensitive to it, believe it or not. So it's a different world with the online. I'm not huge with it, Paul. I'm probably closer to you, Dennis. You know, you certainly play a lot. I play a little bit. But it will be interesting to see, you know, how that all pans out.
Let me just give you a quote from Isildur 1, who did an interview about various things, including this. And he said, "I played with Brian Townsend and Cole South a lot. They were always waiting for me. The last session where Hastings won all the money, it just felt like something was wrong. Everything that could go wrong for me did. Every time I tried to pull off a bluff of some kind, it felt as if it was being picked off. At the time, I just thought it was crazy luck, but now, knowing they shared a lot of their analysis of hand histories with each other, it makes a lot more sense." Now, again, I will tell you, as a person who plays mostly live and a little bit online, from my live poker experience, every poker player has been in that situation. I just ended up on the bad side of everything. Every time I tried to pull something off, they caught me on it. Every time I thought they were doing something, I couldn't catch them on it. He was getting all the cards. You know, every complaint about bad beats and all
right,
that sort of stuff, to me, that's wrapped up right there in what Isildur 1 is complaining about.
Well, I don't know, because I can just imagine a scenario of live play where three guys are playing, and the one guy wins a lot of the money. He's successful at it. The other two guys get up, and they go over to a friend of theirs and say, "Okay, you're going to play him now. Here's what you need to do." And they talk back and forth and compare things and take notes and the whole bit like that on
okay
it. And perhaps even, because they played for hours on this thing, in the middle of it, they could have, who knows what. I mean, they shared all the information with him.
Well, don't you think, you know, we talked with Jim McManus last week about his book,
right,
Cowboys Fold, The Story of Poker, a terrific book, and we talked to him a little bit about Andy Beal,
yep,
that billionaire banker from Texas who went to Las Vegas and played against Doyle Brunson, Todd Brunson, Phil Ivey, Jennifer Harmon,
right,
who all worked together as the corporation against him. Don't you think that during the down times, those pros went to dinner and said, "Here's something I noticed in his game"?
But the thing of it is, he went in that with his eyes open, knowing exactly that that was going to happen. He challenged them. He knew they were going to talk to each other. He went them one after another, and in the end, they did win on it. Isidore went in there just going face-to-face with one person. He didn't realize his entire hand history from two of his other people he played tens of thousands of hands were suddenly going to be at this guy's disposal.
Well, then he went in with his eyes shut.
Well,
I mean, you got to know if you're a poker player, other people are going to talk poker. We do it all the time. When the three of us get together in Vegas or wherever and we sit down, we talk about a guy. Oh, I played this guy. Oh, yeah, I think I played against him before. Is he the guy? Yeah, that's the guy. We've done that ourselves. Yeah. Are we violating some ethical rule of poker by doing that, Joe?
Well, but we didn't do what they did. You know, and maybe there is a difference. You know, just to what degree is that difference and how much more valuable is it? And is that more on that kind of unethical or illegal or policy? You talk about a player and what their tendencies are, and it's my feel and what I've seen, is that different than going in with a computer program that does this analysis perhaps for you? And, you know, when he bets 50% of the pot, you know, I don't even know what they did. But, you know, if it really helps to be able to pick off these bluffs by what his betting patterns are, what the bet sizing is, and, you know, maybe even how much time he takes, whatever it was they were able to figure out by consolidating all of these hands, I would say that was probably pretty valuable information that they were able to get that, you know, otherwise they wouldn't be able to get. Now, over time, if they played it straight, perhaps, and they played this guy for another month, maybe one person would have had enough hand histories to do it themselves. And I think that's what the problem was, is that they shared, I think. And again, I'm not that well read on this, but I think it's that they shared. So maybe... And also, I believe that these guys are pretty public with it. I think they didn't even realize they did anything wrong. You know,
yeah.
I think they were just out. They weren't bragging about it, but I think they were just talking about, hey, this is what we did. And I think they didn't even realize they did anything unethical or in the wrong.
Oh, I agree with you. Maybe to take it a step further than this thing, it would be almost like on a live tournament, you videotaping a guy. And then taking that videotape back and say, when you play him next time, here's a videotape. I want you to watch this, and you know, because that would be a huge potential. Now you do it enough on TV already.
Yeah.
But you know,
right.
Again, I'm just trying to cover all the points here on it.
I understand.
Because in theory, I kind of agree with you, but there is a fine line here, and they may have crossed it. It was against it, even though they had no knowledge of it. And I don't think for one moment that Brian Hastings thought he was doing anything wrong. That's not my point.
I agree.
But the fact is, he did break the guidelines. He did break the rules of that site.
Yep.
And is it to... I don't know how you justify it or how you enforce it or anything like that, but he did break the rules.
I think he's been suspended by that site for a month, maybe two. I don't know. But I will make this deal with you right now. Give me $4.2 million, I won't play for a couple months.
Okay.
All right.
You figured you could live off the interest, maybe.
Yeah,
you know?
I think I can.
Okay, no problem.
Speaking of getting rich from poker, congratulations to Mike Kozowski, who I thought was that character Billy Crystal played in Monsters,
oh,
Inc.
Oh, my gosh.
But that's Mike Wazowski.
Yeah, you were close.
This is Mike Kozowski, the former NYPD detective who beat Daniel Negreanu on Sunday in the PokerStars.net $1 Million Challenge on Fox during NFL football. Or right before or after. It was before here and after in some other cities. How about this guy beating them? And you were there when it was taped.
Actually, I was there the breakfast before that. I actually met him and the people that came out with him. He has a daughter that plays also in that. We shook hands the whole bit. He said, I know I'm a long shot. I'm an alternate. I'm probably not even going to get on. But it's so much fun to come out here, and he's so happy to meet all the people and everything. He was having the time of his life.
He won some kind of second chance tournament to get there to be one of the final four.
Correct.
And then he beat the priest and the other two guys.
Correct.
And then he got to go heads up with Daniel.
Yeah.
Now while we're talking the ethics of poker, I seriously want to ask you this question.
Oh, no. Here we go.
Because it's entirely possible that next time they tape this show, you'll be one of the pros.
I've already been asked. Yes.
Okay, I mean, Barry Greenstein did it, Chris Moneymaker did it, Vanessa Russo did it, etc. If you were in Daniel's position and you get to that final table against this guy who doesn't have the money, he's got a wife, he's got two daughters, he's playing for the $1 million.
Yep.
Daniel was playing to win $100,000 for his charity,
which
is great, but are you going to play as ruthlessly as you possibly can to deny this guy the $1 million prize?
Okay, now I know Daniel fairly well, and Daniel's a great guy.
Yes.
And I'm telling you right there, Daniel may have been rooting for him, but Daniel's still going to play his game. All right. And I don't blame him, and I would too. Did he mind losing? Heck no. Give me a break. He probably stood up and congratulated the guy and said, I am just tickled to death over it.
To see that guy's eyes well up with tears.
You know, the whole bit. But when you're there, it's you just have to play your game. And I don't think the guy would have been happy for him to have basically handed him his chips. That would not have. No. Daniel played his game.
I'm not saying Daniel didn't play his game. I'm just asking, you know, if you were in that situation, would you think to yourself, you know what, I don't really think I have you beat, but I'm going to call anyway. I mean, would you do stuff like that, or would you try to get every read you could and play as hard as you could to try to beat him?
You've got to play your game. You absolutely do. But I'm telling you, a position like this is a great guy. I talked to him for 15 or 20 minutes that morning. He's got a heck of a story. Everybody in the place was rooting, and this is a new one for Daniel. Everybody there was rooting for him and against Daniel. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Daniel was rooting against Daniel. All right. But you still got to play your game. You really do.
I will say it again, just as we've said a couple of times before, that show doesn't exist and is not as successful if Daniel Negreanu is not the guy. If he's not the go-to guy on that show, I don't see that show being as successful. Doesn't mean that they can't do it again with you or some other pro, but he is just so gregarious and so warm towards these people. Yeah. I really believe you that he wanted these people to win the $1 million.
I think there's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But again, I also know Daniel, and he would play his game. But I'm telling you, he was rooting against himself for one of the few times ever.
What is the plan for bringing the show back? Will it be back next fall during football season, or are they going to do it in the spring, or when would the next round
be? Actually, that's all been working out. We have renewed it, so there will be a season two. We're already talking about the different. We've got a number of announcements that are going to come out in January.
Yeah, at the PCA, right?
At the PCA. There's a team pro meeting down there. We're going to be together for 2 weeks. We've got a mess of things to work out. We have some dynamite things coming out for 2010.
Can we hint at one of them?
You can hint at a number of them. I know a whole lot of them. I can't publicly state anything. But
can I just say, keep the month of February open?
That would be a wise thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, The third or fourth week of February could be real interesting.
Very,
How's
very
that?
Interesting. Yeah. I think that's good.
Yeah, that'll work.
All right, we got to take a break. Unfortunately, we just heard from Vanessa Russo's assistant that she will not be able to join us today. Hopefully, we'll be able to have her. She'll be down in the Bahamas with you at the PCA.
Yes.
So grab her, and I mean that in the nicest possible way.
Okay, please, please, please. Let's not go there.
You know what? Grab Chad Brown, her husband, too. Get the two of them together, and because we've never had Chad on the show. Vanessa's done the show, but Chad hasn't.
Chad is bigger than me.
You grab him more gently.
There you go. Okay.
Well, I think you'd actually want to grab her. Anyway.
Get your foot out of your mouth.
All right,
okay?
Fine. So she can't be here, but we'll take this break, and then we'll come back, and the poker coach, Joe McGowan, will do a little seminar for you here on setting up your bluffs. And then we've got more poker news to discuss as we continue with our final show from Lumiere Place in downtown St. Louis. Next week, the final table moves to Harrah's St. Louis. Wherever we go, we have great sponsors who are coming with us, including the Poker Players Alliance. This is a terrific organization we're happy to be aligned with, a nonprofit membership organization full of people like you and Dennis and me who play poker, whether it's online or in casinos or in home games. The PPA has had a pretty good year advocating for poker players like us.
Oh, they absolutely have. We've now got the backing of a ton of the representatives and senators out there. Barney Frank's bill's got almost 80 people signed up for it, including over 20 from the financing committee. We put through and got delayed for a minimum of 6 months the enforcement of that controversial UIGEA bill. Hopefully within these next 6 months, we'll come up with a resolution both in the House and in the Senate that can get passed and get rid of this ludicrous law that's been in there.
The PPA only exists because of people like you. Become a member today. Go to the website, thePPA.org. That's thePPA.org, the Poker Players Alliance. This is the final table on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with a St. Louis poker pro who beat over 13,000 other players in 2 years at the World Series of Poker main event. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Welcome back to the Final Table here at the Lumiere Hotel and Casino. I'm Dennis Phillips. I'm here with Paul Harris, and we're bringing the final show of the year here to it. This segment is brought to you by Reactor Watch, the watch that I wear the watch that Albert Pujols wears. It's an unbelievable watch. I've said this time and time again, but you guys need to go online and check out that Trident that they've just brought out. It looks gorgeous, and it just is the most durable thing you will ever find. It's still the only watch I know of that survived two IEDs, a suicide bomber, and who knows what else. They're dropping this thing 35 feet off of a bridge onto a concrete slab and not having a problem with it. Tell me what other watch you can do that with. And they guarantee this thing, no matter what, unconditional guarantee, if you ever have a problem with it, they will fix it. It's Reactor Watch. Go to the chipleader.com, click on the link, and go to Reactor Watches. You'll never regret it, guys.
Speaking of the chipleader.com, that's also where you can get the podcast of this show each and every week. And a reminder that next week we are moving the show to Harrah's St. Louis, the new home of the Final Table. Now let's bring back the poker coach, Joe McGowan, who's got a poker coach segment for us today on bluffing. Right, Joe?
Well, I think I'm going to start out with a little story from last year's World Series. I was playing in the 10K, and it's labeled the World Championship Limit Event. And I was either fortunate or unfortunate enough to have Barry Greenstein sitting on my left for, it was either day two or whatever it was, because it was in the final run there. They paid the top 18th. I managed to be the chip leader when there was 23 people left. I end up coming in 19th somehow, but we won't talk too much about that. But a hand with Barry that I got tangled up with, and I had raised, and I believed he re-raised, and to shorten this portion of it, I had something like a ace queen of hearts, say, and all I flopped was two hearts, so I feel pretty good about the hand because I had the two overs and its limit. And the way it comes down, where I catch an ace on the river, and Barry bets the river, and I end up winning the pot. And when we roll the cards over, I roll my cards over, and he throws it away. He says to me how I – he didn't say it in a nasty way, guys, when we were talking a bit. He said to me in a way how I got lucky that I hit one of my outs. But my ace-queen by itself was the best hand. And it just made me think a little bit differently that basically what Barry was doing was he was calculating in his mind all the other cards in the deck that could have come for his bluff to work. You know, I needed to hit, even though my hand, if you would watch on TV, my hand might have had the 80% next to it and his had the tiny percentage, but he was actually the big favorite to win the hand because he's on the bluff and a high portion of the cards to come with only one card to come were in his favor and I had hit. So it just, with that little conversation and that one hand, and because he opened up a little bit to me, it made me think a little bit differently about bluffing and outs and how to play certain hands, and it was very, very interesting. Now, one of the things that he had on me that I think is one of the keys to the bluff or to running a bluff is having position. Calling with hands and cards when you're in position is pretty key. Because when the board changes or something happens, when you're in position against a player, now you can spring this bluff. Now, what you do not want to do, you don't want to be a player that comes and sits down in a strange game and they purposefully bluff off chips to try to set up that image, and then later on they're going to tighten up and they hope they get paid off and everybody remembers that they bluff. I would definitely not recommend to do that. I think you always want to bluff, and you can play a little more active if you want to try to have that image and go for that. Be a little bit more active, but just do it completely where you think it's going to work. And then if you get caught and there's a showdown and you have to show, okay, now you've got your value, you got caught, and you got to show the bluff. But don't ever do it just to come in and be active and bluff off chips, which actually some people do. So we're going to recommend that you don't do that. Now let's talk about this situation where you're going to be playing, say, whatever size cash game you're in. When you're in position and somebody opens up for a raise, and let's just say for the sake of argument, you look down and you have 7-8 of clubs, and you decide you're going to call against this player. Now, you're calling with a 7-8 of clubs, not, again, necessarily to bluff, because one of the keys about a bluff, it really shouldn't be planned. Not many bluffs are planned. I can't think of spots where I said, hey, you know what, tomorrow night I'm going to go play, and when I'm on the button against the person in, seat three on the turn, I'm going to bluff. They just happen. They get created. It comes up, and boom, here's a good bluffing opportunity. Or this card came, or this player looks this way. Here's a good bluffing opportunity. But in general, it will help if you're in position to be able to run a bluff. So that's one thing that's going to help you. So you might be able to call with a hand like 7-8 of clubs to an upfront raiser. If certain things are lined up, that could be one thing that could be in your favor to be able to pull off a bluff, is that you do have that position, which is a big key. Some of the other things, of course, are going to be the player. Is this a bluffable player? Some players we know, guys, I mean, how many times have you guys played a hand and you know you just can't bluff this guy? I mean, has that happened with a lot of the guys that you play with on a regular basis? You just know certain players, you don't bluff them, correct?
Those are the guys I really like, usually, because then when you catch a hand, they're going to call whatever you throw out there. Yeah.
Exactly.
Those you play them different, though. Joe, you got an excellent point there. Play the players, because there are certain people you can bluff, certain ones you can't. Certain players actually almost invite you to bluff against them on it.
And some guys are just such calling stations, they're impossible to bluff. So,
exactly.
Of course,
both
in this spot, if that's the type of player, a 7-8, you know, even though it's suited or whatever, I'm probably just going to throw it away. But if it's against a tight player and you feel that their range of hands is such that you can really possibly put them on a bigger pocket pair, and now the chip stacks line up. You know, you have a lot of implied odds. They're sitting really deep to where you can either hit your hand and maybe get paid, or, you know, maybe the board and the texture of the board can change as the hand goes along, and you might be able to make a play, and this person's someone that you can bluff, and your image is right, and everything's lined up properly. You might be able to run a play. Now, let's say you have this 7-8 of clubs, and let's say the flop comes out 4-6-8, two hearts. So pretty good flop because you hit top pair, but you're not in love yet because you thought this guy might have an overpair. You know, and this is that type of player. When he raises up front, you really respect his raises, and you even more respect his upfront raises. He's not perhaps one of the younger internet type of players that's playing tons of hands and three betting tons of hands that he could have anything. You know, he may be an internet player that's tight. He may be a live game player, but whatever it is, you feel that he has a bigger hand, so you're happy that you hit top pair and you have a gut shot now because it's 4-6-8, two hearts, and you have 7-8, hypothetically. Now, on the turn, let's say he bets and you just call because you don't want to build the big pot. You want to keep the pot small, and you want to see what he does on the turn. If he has ace-king, ace-queen, you feel he might shut down, and you have backdoor clubs to go with it as well. So the turn, let's just say a 9 comes, and it's not a heart, it's a spade. So now you have the two hearts out there, and your hand improved, but very subtle because, you know, you just picked up potentially more outs because now you have the straight draw to go with your top pair. Okay, guys?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right, so now when you calculate your outs, you're figuring you have 4 5s that you can hit for the straight. You figure you have 4 10s that you can hit for the straight. All right, you can also hit the other 2 8s, which you'd really like. You'd feel real comfortable with those two. And then you also feel you could perhaps hit your kicker, even though that puts a different straight out there, but you don't put your opponent on that hand at all. So you feel that would be good as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in this situation, and I hope this isn't too tricky at all for some of our listeners, but in this situation, to me, you have 8 outs that you really like, the straight outs. You have a total of about 13 outs that you pretty much like. But then you also have what I call bluff outs, where you can represent the hearts because your story and you're just calling and you just called preflop. He knows that you know that he's a tight player and he probably has a hand. He's thinking to himself, what is he calling me with? Now, if a heart comes on the river, that doesn't help you, but does it? I think it can help you against the right player because now you have these bluff outs. So I think it's also a good spot to either call. I would probably just call in this spot and not build a big pot and gamble because it kind of takes away a little bit of the bluff and you're building too much of a pot. by raising. Certainly you could raise if you had a little more read that you thought the player would fold right there. But I would like just the call because you have so many true good outs, but then you have six more hearts that could come, and I hope I did this quickly with the math. I could be off slightly. You could be up to 19 outs total. Eight of them you love, 13 you feel pretty good about, and then you have six more hearts that could come where you could actually bluff because, again, you're in position. Because if a heart comes, this type of player that I profiled was relatively tight, probably going to check it to you. Most players, when they hit the hearts, they hit the flush, they usually don't check it. They usually bet it. So now a heart comes, he checks it. Who knows? You could have been good with your top pair if he had just ace-king, ace-queen anyway, and you're not even bluffing at this point. You'd be, you know, you think you're bluffing, but you're bluffing with the best hand. But likely, let's say he has the overpair, the hearts come, you can make, you know, 80% pot bet, and very often this type of player will maybe not insta-fold, but really put you on two pair, on a set, on the hearts, you know, on the straight that's on the flop, anything. There's so much out there that could potentially beat this guy, and the chips and the bet that you make. And here's another key. I've talked about this a little bit in the past. If you can at all, if you can remember, and if it was in that same session, even better, and you had the nuts, or you had, you know, top set or something, and there was a showdown and you showed it, what did you do when you put those chips in the pot? How did you look? Did you cut them out first? Did you splash in the pot? Did you lean back in the chair? Did you put your hands up by your face like a Jesus Ferguson or a Helmuth? You know, try to look the same way when you were strong before. So everything's adding up to this player. Everything. How you put the chips in, how you looked, what you said, what you didn't say. The whole story adds up to he's got a hand on beat. I need to lay this down. So I think, you know, there's a lot to this one today. But to not most people, for me, when they add up their outs, they're very clear. I had 13 outs. You know, I had a straight draw. I had this. I had that. Well, how many did you really like, you know, of those outs? Sometimes you count the outs with a flush draw. The other guy's got a bigger flush draw. You know, those weren't even outs at all. So those outs, when you have a little 5-6 of clubs or a small flush draw, and someone else has moved all in, they might be moving all in, trying to push you out because they have the nut flush draw. So you're calling with these outs, but they're not really good outs. So you might be down to, you know, hitting your kicker or hitting the pair that you have. So how many outs do you have that you like? How many outs do you think that you might have that are live? And then do you have any bluff outs? So be careful with this. But overall, I think it's a good way to think and, you know, look at the whole situation when you play of earning some extra chips and
America right now
a good bluff.
That's the poker coach Joe McGowan here at the final table. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, Dennis has some things he wants to add to this conversation. But first, this is 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com. This is the final table live from the Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel in downtown St. Louis. Paul Harris with Team Poker Stars Pro Dennis Phillips and Joe the poker coach McGowan, who just gave you a great example of how to use the danger card when it comes against your opponent and considering extra outs that you may not consider because the other guy doesn't want to see that card, and now you can bluff with that card even if you don't have the best hand. Dennis, you wanted to jump in with some comments about this.
Well, I'm telling you, Joe had some excellent points on this. If you guys, I would almost recommend you go back to the chip leader and you pull up the podcast and you listen to it again, because he went over a ton of things here on this. A few quick ones. It has to make sense. When he described how if the third heart hits on the river, how you can portray it being a flush, that's because of the betting pattern. That's because of how you played it. It has to make sense
right
on it.
And conversely, if you're the guy who has that big overpair and that danger card comes and the guy starts acting differently than you've seen him act before, ask yourself, does this story make sense to me or do I have to call?
Well, again, it all goes back. Are you, what hand are you putting this other player on? And what hand are you portraying is he going to be putting you on, or mm-hmm. what range of hands? The better you get at that, the better you play poker. I'm telling you, just to make it a simpler one, I'll try to be real brief about this. An ace can be such a danger card out there. If you have a gentleman who's playing pretty much ABC poker, and he raises with a pair, and you smooth call behind him, flop comes out there, and there's an ace out there, and he checks, You know if he has his ace-queen, his ace-jack, or whatever he's going to be betting there. He obviously doesn't have it. This guy either now has a monster and has flopped a set from one of the second or third cards that came out there, or he's worried about the ace.
And the same could be true if it comes eight high rainbow, like 8-5-deuce rainbow, and he raised pre-flop, and now he checks into you.
Yeah.
He's probably on ace-king, ace-queen, something like that. Now, he might have flopped a set there as well.
Possible.
You got to know that from playing him.
But if you know the player,
yep,
those are perfect positions to take that pot.
Yep.
I'm telling you, there are so many pots that are left wide open there where it only takes any kind of a bet at all, and you take it home. You've got to be able to recognize those. You've got to be able to recognize the player. You put him on that range of hands, and you take advantage of it. Joe brought out just some flat-out. This is one of the best sessions, I think, that Joe has come forward with. There is so much information in that thing, we can't even begin to get into it right now.
Absolutely. Great stuff, Joe. Is there anything you want to add before we wrap up for the day?
No, I think I'm pretty good. Thank you, guys.
Okay. Nice job today. Joe, the poker coach McGowan, who will be back with us when the show moves to our new home,
yeah,
1 week from today. Once again, we want to take a moment to thank everybody here at Lumiere Place, not just Tony Russo, who we mentioned at the top of the show, the assistant casino manager, but also Jeff Babinski, who has now gotten promoted up inside the Pinnacle Corporation.
True.
And is working elsewhere, and Mario and Michael and everybody else who have made us feel at home here and put our ugly mugs on that giant pylon video screen overlooking I-70 here in downtown St. Louis.
That's probably the only mistake they made the whole time.
Big mistake. And to this day, I don't know why there haven't been more pileups out there from our bald, bearded faces showing up out there.
Whoa. I got to thank you from the police. They said everybody slows down in awe that it could be actually shown that they're actually driving slower.
I think they're slowing down so they could shield their children's eyes. I think that's what it is.
Okay.
Anyway, thanks again to everybody here at Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel. Next week, the show moves to Harrah's Casino and Hotel here in St. Louis. For those of you who listen to the podcast, you will still be able to get all of this great content downloaded anytime you want from Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. You can also subscribe via iTunes. And let me take just 10 seconds to thank three guys, Johnny Brown, Matthew Warren, and 3D Gar. These are guys who posted positive reviews of our show on iTunes. And we appreciate that. And if you do it, we'll give you a little heads up and tip of the hat on a future show as well. So that's it for the year 2009. Thank you to everyone who listens to this show on 590 The Fan KFNS. Thanks to Scott Stout, our remote engineer, and thanks to Bradford Bruns, who runs things back in the studio, and to Dave Green, who's the owner and general manager of 590 The Fan KFNS, for giving us a broadcast home all year long. We start off in 2010 with Dennis in the Bahamas and me in St. Louis. We hope you'll join us next week for another round of The Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.